We talked a little bit about the schedules, where you can find things, where you see things, where the trigger questions are on the PF. So let's just jump in and talk about self-dealing. Okay. We specifically clipped the page from the section from the 990 PF because self-dealing, more than anything else, because there is no de minimis for self-dealing, there is no reasonableness test. They're just, you know, this is an area of tax law where you cannot reason it out. It doesn't matter if the private foundation got a good deal. If you have a violation, you have a violation. They include sale or exchange, leasing of property. This language from the tax return is pretty much straight from the statute. And it's also the language that you'll find on the 4720. So,
and what's confusing often about this language, for those of you who have been through it, is the way they phrase, like, often we answer yes to 1A, but then when you get to 1B, did any of the facts fail to qualify under the exceptions described? It's phrased in such a way that it trips people up, and I've seen people check the wrong box from a return standpoint because they didn't understand the question. Like, they were moving quickly, they might not have been advised by counsel or by an accountant, and they just move forward from the organization, and then it triggered a problem for them. So again, this is something that I always trip over because I always get a question when someone reviews the return that doesn't understand the return. They ask, how do we check yes, and how do we check this answer yes, and why is it yes, and why is it not no, and so on and so forth. So just, again, that's one of those little things to be careful about, even if you know that what it says. I've seen it trip people up.
Yeah, these yes-no boxes are extremely important, and they're extremely complex, but just because you check yes doesn't mean that you necessarily have an issue. You get a lot of people who are very concerned that there's a yes check here, as if any time you check one of these boxes, you have a problem. But any organization that compensates its executive will check yes here. Any organization that is in the building, for example, of its, of a sponsor or family office or whatnot, uses the space of someone else who's related, will check yes here. Those can also fall into exceptions. So you'll go down to 1B, and you'll say that they did any of the acts fail to qualify, and you'll say no. So it's okay to have a yes as long as you then have that no down there. The really important point here, and just to go through some of these self-dealing, these are pretty self-explanatory. It's the item 1A5 here that is really the catch-all. And so it's this income or transfer use of the income or assets of the foundation that really becomes so many things fall into. Did your DP have a benefit that resulted from the foundation's assets or use of assets? So that can really be a catch-all question. And sometimes people will say, well, I'm looking at this list and I didn't have a sale or exchange, or I didn't do one of these specific things that are worded here. And then you have to point out the broadness of this item 5 here.
As well as the fact that it could be direct or indirect. So this is the place, again, which trips a lot of people up. And so as when we plan on these things, and often it is a question of stepping back and saying, okay, let's think of how we impact our disqualified persons, right? So stepping back and asking those questions and thinking about it from the perspective of what kind of benefit do we give to them. Luckily, under that one, as I recall, there's the incidental and tenuous benefits, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about, and that can be elastic or could be narrow. And I think the way they're intended to be is kind of narrow, but we make them more elastic. The funny thing about that is people interpret that incidental and tenuous, I've seen this happen a lot, to all the other ones. And there is no de minimis, as Hilly said, there's no de minimis exception in the other ones, and this incidental and tenuous is meant to kind of be a weird de minimis exception. Mm-hmm. But I've seen people say, no, it was incidental and tenuous about something else.
About rent.
Or about some other transaction, when that doesn't exist. And I've even seen the IRS make this mistake sometimes, and you can't necessarily rely on that. So it's just something to pay attention to as you're thinking about your self-dealing and the context here, that you don't have that out for most of these transactions.
Generally, self-dealing, and the courts have even said this, should be construed very narrowly. Unless there is an exception. So we can talk about some of the specific exceptions. So I made the comment that anyone who pays their executive will check yes here. Well, there's an exception for compensation for personal services, as long as it's reasonable and not excessive. And we'll talk about that more. That's a specific statutory exception. So when an exception exists, great. Otherwise, you're looking at this very narrowly. I really want to flip one back. This item C here, did the foundation engage in a prior year in any acts that haven't been corrected? this self-dealing is the only Chapter 42 violation that has this question, and this question holds up signing of returns more than any other question on the return. Especially, we'll get a new client, and we'll dig something up in the past. Everywhere else in the tax world, a lot of times in the legal world, people say, we'll fix that going forward. Self-dealing is the one place where if you want to check this box correctly under penalties of perjury and have your preparer sign the return, you can't just fix things going forward. You have to fix things as long as the statute is open. So these become very, very important.